Let me get right into things tonight. Happy Labor Day! Oh, I don't think you guys quite understand. This is big stuff. Happy Labor Day! I know that you guys are probably tired of the Labor Day messages. It's kind of like Christmas and Easter, right? We just get these messages that keep coming all the time. But we're going to do a Labor Day message tonight, okay? Because I'm committed to relevant preaching. And I know that you guys, at the sake of repeating what you may have heard at church yesterday and all those YouTube sermons that you've been listening to today on Labor Day messages, I'm gonna stick with my guns, and we're gonna do a Labor Day message. Labor, it's a good thing. It's something God asks us to do. It's to work. And I know growing up that when I was asked to work by my dad, there was a little bit of a groan that would either be verbal or it would at least be mental, right? Hey, I need you to pick up this. And I see it with my own kids. And there is this negative feeling that comes with being asked to do work for work's sake, just a chore. And I don't want that to be the case tonight. I don't want you to think of this as your dad telling you to work. And I don't want you to even look at God, your Father, as a dad that's asking you to do just a chore. But I'd rather you kind of get into this mode where your heart is stirred by God. And there's been a few of those occurrences in my life where, man, when Dad asked me to do something, I'd moan, I'd groan, I'd complain, I'd begrudgingly do it. But there were those few instances when it seemed as if God was pointing something to me. He was stirring something within me, and I woke up really motivated to work hard, to do something on behalf of the Lord. And one of those things was to go to the Philippines. One of those things was, hey, I know it's going to be hard to ask for money. I know it's going to be hard to raise support. I know it's going to be hard to live in the Philippines. I had no idea that it was going to be so hard that I was going to have a wife with me, and we were going to experience some pretty difficult times with our family there, and I knew that there was going to be some heartache, and I didn't understand how hard it was going to be, but in the midst of all that work, God was there stirring my heart, saying, keep going. And it was a different kind of feeling that I had, and it's a feeling I desire for all of you. And it can be something as big as going to the Philippines, but it can be something quite as small, seemingly, as you do in your homework. Because I think that all of these things in the grand scope, if God's stirring your heart to do something, to do a job this semester, if he is stirring that within you, then I believe that that is something within you that would be relevant, because it's God saying, I got a bigger picture in mind. He wouldn't stir your heart if it was just a mundane thing. He only stirs our heart over the things that really do matter. And you might think that something as silly as getting a job, something as simple as getting some good friends, might not be big enough. And I think God's saying in the grand picture, they are very much big enough. So I want to ask us to have the guts tonight to ask the Lord to enter into your heart and to stir your heart in the direction he wants it to go. I'm going to ask you throughout the course of this evening to let that process start, to let that process begin, because I believe that there is a difference between doing work and doing a great work. A great work is something that the Lord gives you. And I believe that we all have great work to do this semester, each one of us. And it's probably going to look a little bit different for each one of us. And so I'm not here to say everyone's great work is to do this or to go out on the quad and to act like an idiot. Your great work can be unique to what God is stirring in your heart tonight. And so I want to challenge you to the idea that God really does have a great work for you. Determining what your great work is, I might give you a few ideas. Let me throw a few ideas up here. Finding godly friends. To find that godly friend, I mean, that doesn't sound like that might be that big of a deal, but it's crucial. You are who you're with. We've been talking about community for the last 2 weeks and how important it is, how essential it is. And you might be just kind of putting your toes in and experiencing a community, but you also have kind of your main community over here that you know is probably not the best of influences, and it's not been the best experience for you, but you're afraid to dive in. This might be your great work, to dive in this semester. To get good grades, a lot of you have been just maybe telling yourself, I'm just going to do the minimum, just going to get by. I just am not motivated. Ask the Lord. Maybe he's stirring your heart to say, you need to be motivated. I've got big plans for you, and I need you to get 3.5, or you're not going to get those big plans. And he's got that motivating for you. Maybe that's your big thing. Break an old habit. There's a ton of old habits. We've all got them. We've got these pet sins. We've got these things that we just carry around that we hold on to. And I don't know if that bad habit has something to do with your intake, or if it has something to do with, your internet habits, or what it might be. But breaking that old habit might be the time God's saying, this is your great work for this semester. Start a new habit. I know it's very cliche to talk about exercise and talk about eating right, but that might be the habit that you're needing to start. Maybe God's stirring that within you and say, you know what, this is the time. This is the time to start. And some of you, it might just be simple as making some money, getting out there and doing some work and helping out what mom and dad have put forth. Those are just a few categories. I can think of 10 other ones, and you can too. Maybe there's a boyfriend that you need to break up with. Maybe there's a girlfriend you need to start a relationship with. Sorry to make that positive for the boys. I didn't mean that. it might be something along those lines. It could be any number of things. But there was a guy in the Old Testament who really did have a great work that was stirred in his heart. His name was Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was a part of this remnant of Israelites, God's chosen people. And God's chosen people had a chosen city. This is a city on a hill named Jerusalem. And this city was ransacked, and there was this great exile. The Babylonians came in, destroyed and plundered the city and knocked down this wall. And if you know anything about cities in those days, I mean, the only thing that you've really got to protect yourself against enemies is a wall. And the wall was completely destroyed all the way around. It was just a heap of rubble. All the gates were broken and burned, and the rocks were destroyed and left in a heap. And word gets back to Nehemiah that this city that he's heard all about, not even quite sure that he grew up there. I think this was just he's just a remnant, a descendant. And he hears word that his home city, this city of people that were God's people and God's city, that it's destroyed. And immediately he is heavy-hearted, he is weeping, and he prays. And I cannot overemphasize enough as I retell the story, as I condense it, because we don't have time to go through the whole story, I cannot overemphasize how many times Nehemiah prays throughout the course of this whole story. He prays to the Lord for strength. He prays to the Lord for wisdom. But all the while, he is stirred to do a great work. And that great work is to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall. But he's got some problems. He's got some hurdles. I mean, he just can't just go there. He's got issues that he's got to deal with first in his hometown. Now, he lives in Persia. And in this area, he's got probably the cushiest job in all of Persia because he is the cupbearer to the king. What does that mean? Well, the king of Persia is a pretty powerful guy, probably the most powerful guy in the world at that time. And it's King Artaxerxes, bad dude, mean dude, tough dude, leader dude. But he's tight with the king. He's the cupbearer to the king. He started off as just a servant, but he's worked his way up because he's been faithful, because he's been doing the job that he was supposed to do. And he ends up becoming a buddy to the king. Now, do you know what a cupbearer to the king is? Do you know what a cupbearer does? He tests the wine before the king drinks it, so make sure he's kind of the poison tester. And so boiled down, this is really what he drinks with the king. This is what he, this is his job. This is the cushiest job I can possibly think of. What do you do? I hang around, I chat with the king, we drink a few. This is his job. But he has developed a relationship with this king. The king trusts him. And he's got to get up enough nerve now to go to the king and to say, King, I've got something I really need to do a long ways from here. And it has to do with people that aren't your people. They're my people. I really want to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. Took a little bit of guts. Took a little bit of guts to go to the boss and to ask for time off. A significant amount of time off. But he's so tight with the king that the king ends up saying, you know what? Not only am I going to give you time off, I'm going to give you actually some resources. I'm going to give you some men to work with. I'm going to give you some things to build with. I'll give you some timber for some of the gates. I'll do what I can to help you out. And so he sends him on his way. And as he gets there, he's got to travel a great distance. It's not like here where we just got to hop a flight. It wasn't like he was on standby for a day. That was his big suffering. No, he had to like work. He had to get there. And then once he got there, he had to climb the mountain to Jerusalem. He climbs the mountain and he has to get everybody around there organized. He has to get them building. He has to get them working. And then he has to find himself actually at one of those stations where there is a heap of rubble, and he's got to actually sift through it, and he's got to build this wall with his own hands. It's laborious. It's work. I can sort of understand a little bit of the frustration, not anywhere to that degree, but Amorin came in my backyard because they're Amorin, and they said that we had some issues underground with our electrical, and so they ended up digging in 5 different spots in my backyard and they left big piles about this high of rubble. Some cement, some clods of dirt, some clods of sod. It was hot, you know how hot it was this summer. And I had to sift through that with my own hands. It took me about 5 hours of work and just sorting this stuff out. And I'm thinking, I didn't sign up for this. They left this in a heap, and I was really getting a little frustrated and mad. It's my little cry story. Okay. I'm all right. But he actually gets to this spot, and I can't imagine how overwhelming it must have felt. I just had a couple of piles. How overwhelming it must have felt to have all of this rubble at his feet. He starts rebuilding. And he ends up getting some progress, and he ends up moving along. And some of his enemies, the people that really wanted to keep Israel down, enemies of Israel, began to plan, and they began to plot against his attempt. Have I done a good job in bringing us up to speed on the story? You guys with me? I hope so, because here we go. When you are asked to do a great work, when you are stirred by God to do a great work, some things are going to happen. One, distractions are going to come. And let's read about the distractions that happened. Sanballat. He's the evil man. Okay, he's the nemesis. He's the bad guy. He's the guy who's trying to thwart the plans of Nehemiah. Sanballat and Geshem sent this message: "Come and meet with us at Kephirim in the valley of Ono." Now this is firsthand Nehemiah speaking, and he says, "I knew that they were scheming to hurt me, so I sent messengers back with this. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. Why should the work come to a standstill just so I can come down to see you?" I want us tonight to learn a phrase. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. Okay? We're going to say that together. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. I'm doing a great work, I can't come down. Again, I'm doing a great work, I can't come down. This is a phrase I want you guys to get familiar with. I want this to be something that just sets within you this semester, that this is This is a phrase you got to get comfortable with. I'm doing a great work. I've listened to the stirring of the Lord in my heart. I know what I'm supposed to do, and I am not going to be distracted. This guy very, very innocently sends up a message and says, you know, we ought to have a meeting. We ought to have lunch sometime. You know what? I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. I think there's going to be some times this semester where you're going to be like, you know what? Maybe for you this semester, that great stirring of the Lord and the conviction that you have is that you need to do your homework, and you need to be in a series or a routine that every night at from 10 to 11 you're doing homework. And you come, I can just imagine how that could possibly be your case, your story. You go to the Lord. You listen to that, you pray, just like Nehemiah prayed. Okay, God, yeah, okay, 10 o'clock every night, this is your time. Holy hour, I'm going to do it. I'm going to study every night, 10 o'clock. 10:01 comes, buddy comes in. I'm going out Steak and Shake, want to come? Yep, let's do it. Let's go. Distractions are going to come. When God stirs something within you and you have a great work ahead of you, there will be distractions. And we need to know what our job is, and we need to get familiar with the phrase, I'm doing. Thank you. We're going to say it again, so just get ready. Next part of the story. Love it. Distractions will persist. Four times they sent this message, and four times I gave him my answer. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. And oh yeah, I'm doing a great work. I can't come down. Distractions are going to persist. There's going to be times this semester where maybe your thing is that you're saying, you know, I'm just feeling stirred that I'm not going to drink this semester. Do you think it's possible that there might be four temptations for you this semester in drinking? Do you think it's possible that you might just have four opportunities this semester to be tested in that area? There's going to be persistence to whatever that is that God's stirring within your heart. Next, lies will come. This is kind of a neat, this is all in chapter 6, by the way, of Nehemiah. The fifth time, same messenger came. Same message. Sanballat sent an unsealed letter with this message. The word is out among the nations. And Geshem says it's true that you and the Jews are planning to rebel, and that's why you're rebuilding the wall. The word is that you want to be king and that you have appointed prophets to announce in Jerusalem. There's a king in Judah, and the king is going to be told all of this. Don't you think that we should sit down and have our little talk? What's his response? He sent back this message. There's nothing to what you're saying. You have made it all up. It's a bunch of lies. And by the way, I'm doing a great work, and I can't come down. There are going to be times where you've got a lie that you've got to face head on. And unfortunately, most of the lies that you're going to face this semester are not going to be lies from some evil dude that's named Sanballat. The lies are going to come from within yourself. Lies that you've bought into. And I don't know what your lie is, but I think there's a core lie at the core of why you have this issue to deal with in the first place. Because the reality is this, whatever that thing that God's stirring in your heart to do, it's probably something you've tried to accomplish before, and you failed. And you're not sure you want to try again because you don't like to fail. And God says, but I've got this for you to do. I know it's difficult. I know it's going to be work, but it's a great work, and I need you to do it. And we're going to do it this time, and we're going to address the lies. And we're going to call the lies. We're going to call them out. What is your lie? Well, I just don't know if I'm even capable. That might be your lie. Well, I don't know if I really need friends. Like, I mean, I don't need those kind of friends. I've already got some pretty good friends. You know what? Money, I know we kind of need it, but I'm one of those people that don't really need it. I've heard that so many times from college students. I wanted to smack you. I don't really need money. I'm one of those people that's pretty good without it. No, you're being lazy. What is your core lie? I'm hoping that you're tracking with me. I'm hoping that God's stirring something within you, a great work. And I'm hoping that that lie might be addressed, if not tonight, this week. And that you'd stare it down. And that you'd say, I got something to do. It's a great work, and God's called me to it. Last thing. Deception may even come. Then I met secretly with Shemaiah, the son of Delaiah, the son of somebody. And at this house, he said, let's meet at the house of God inside the temple, and let's find safety behind locked doors because they're coming to kill you. Yes, coming by night to kill you, I said. Why would a man... Oh, then he said, I said, why would... This is Nehemiah talking. Why would a man like me run for cover? And why would a man like me use the temple as a hideout? I won't do it. Man, this guy's determined, isn't he? I sensed that God hadn't sent this man. The so-called prophecy he spoke to me was the work of Tobiah and Sanballat. They had hired him. He had been hired to scare me off, to trick me, a layman, into desecrating the temple and ruining my good reputation so that they could accuse me. Do you see how he saw through what was happening here? This guy came to him, hired by the evil one, and said, hey man, why don't we just hide out in the temple? He used something as holy as the temple as a place to hide out. I wonder if Satan is so scheming, if he is so determined to keep you from doing the great work that God is stirring within your heart, that he is even willing, Satan that is even willing to use a place like Encounter to be your hideout from what your great work might have to be. That this might be a place that you say, you know what? This is God's. I'm with God's people, but you're not getting that job. You're not kicking that habit. You're not doing what that big stirring of the Lord was within you. Satan is up to doing whatever it takes to deceive you from doing the work that he has for you to do. Let's not let this temple be a place that you are able to hide out. Let's be aware that God's got bigger plans for you. And we've got to have vision to see beyond those things. And we've got to be able to say, I'm doing a great work, Satan. I ain't coming down. This is where I got to stand. This is what I got to do. And I'm going to use this community in a way that's going to help me accomplish just the purposes of God, not hide out. I love this last of chapter 6. It says this. The wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul. It had taken 52 days. And all our enemies heard the news, and they all surrounding nations saw it. Our enemies totally lost their nerve, and they knew that God was behind this. Here's something I want you to think about. Nowhere in the book of Nehemiah do we see a blatant miracle. Nowhere do we see God just kind of swooping in and doing some really crazy stuff. God's using a man who is determined to work hard, and he blesses it. And everybody around notices that God was in this thing. And I did a little number crunching. I know this is probably a little weird, but I got to thinking about, it took me a little while to figure this out, and I kind of fudged it, so don't think this is like super holy or anything, but most of you guys aren't going to school all 5 days. You're going about 4 days. Is that about right? A lot of you have Fridays off, and I have to thinking about that, and a lot of people, even if you might have one class in one day, so I kind of assumed that we had 4 days of class each week. And I added up the number of days that you have left in this school year, or this semester, if you go 4 days a week, just school days, I'm just counting school days, and the number's 52. Isn't that kind of cool? And the reason I say that isn't to say, oh, this is like a sign. I'm not one of those guys, okay? The reason I put that up there is because, or the reason I talk about that is because I think we need to think in terms of this semester that God could do something great in the same amount, basically the same amount of time that he did something great with Nehemiah. That you have a great work. If we're really committed this semester to working our tail off, to really being committed to the thing that God's stirring in your heart, what is that great work? There's something there. And for me, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm in a different stage of life than all of you people. I have been stirred by God to invest in my kids in a more intentional way spiritually. And they're in every sport imaginable, and I'm driving them in every direction imaginable, and sometimes I feel like I'm driving them in this different directions at the same time. I'm just driving. And I don't feel like they're all together at the same time in the same place. And I'm feeling really frustrated, and like I'm kind of losing touch with some of them, and like they're just going off with their friends, and the influence I have is being being limited. And some of you have stepped up and are saying, I'm going to help you with that, and I think there's some plans in place, but I'm telling you right now, I'm committed this semester to investing in my kids in a different way. I'm always pretty committed to that, but that's the stirring that's going on in my heart tonight. I don't know what it is for you. But just think about this. What if each of you, I know it's something, and what if each of you took that seriously this semester? Took it so seriously that you were willing to kind of even encode, go to people and just be like, hey, I'm not going to do the whole phrase, but I'm doing a great work here, I think, and I really can't have that distraction on Wednesday night, so appreciate the invite, but the answer is going to be no, probably, the rest of the semester. That we could commit ourselves. We could, like, talk about how we can help each other out, but how we personally need to listen to what the Lord is calling us to do on this Labor Day, on this day that the Lord is calling you to something great. And here's what I want to hope that you do over the course of this semester. As you focus on this one great thing, on this one great work, I want there to be a goal of yours. Every time you see this door in the campus house, tell yourself, by the end of the semester, I'm going to write something on that door that says, I did my work. I did my job. I did the great work that God called me to do. Let's pray. Father, I just want to thank you for giving us work to do. That you're not a God that wants us to go through the motions and just show up at church and pass an offering bucket or to be a greeter. You've asked us to do something great, some great work, not just average work, not just mundane work, not just go through the motions work. But something that's significant. And Father, I am asking that you would stir in our hearts as we sing these next 3 or 4 songs. That you would stir within our hearts what it is that you have us to do. Not just work, but a great work. That we would respond with the same tenacity that Nehemiah did. That we would not be buying into lies. We would not be succumbing to distractions, and we would be able to see through the enemy's deception. Because you've given us this great work. And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.